knows quite well
that material happiness
is the very cause of continued material existence.
And forgetfulness of one's own constitutional position.
Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The living entity, the spirit soul, and the material body is his encagement. This is the beginning of spiritual understanding. Dehi nosmin yata dehe komaram yovanam jara tata dehantara praptir dhirastatra namuyate. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, text 13. The real mission of human life is to get free from encagement in the material body. Therefore, Krishna descends to teach the conditioned soul about spiritual realization and how to become free from material bondage. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. The word dharmasya glani means pollution of one's existence. Our existence is now polluted and it must be purified. Satvam sudyet. The human life is meant for this purification, not for thinking of happiness in terms of the external body, which is the cause of material bondage. Therefore, in this verse, Maharaj Yayati advises that whatever material happiness we see and whatever is promised for enjoyment is all merely flickering and temporary. Abrahma bhuvana loka puna arvatinarjuna. Even if one is promoted to Brahmaloka, if one is not freed from material bondage, one must return to this planet and continue in the miserable condition of material existence. Bhutva bhutva praliyate. One should always keep this understanding in mind so as not to be allured by any kind of sense enjoyment in this life or in the next. One who is fully aware of this truth is self-realized, sa'atmadrik. But aside from him, everyone suffers in the cycle of birth and death. Mrityu samsara vartmani. This understanding is one of true intelligence, and anything contrary to this is but a cause of unhappiness. Krishna bhakta, nishkama, ataiva santa. Only a Krishna conscious person who knows the aim and object of life is peaceful. All others, whether karmis, jnanis, or yogis, are restless and cannot enjoy real peace. Translation, one who knows that material happiness, whether good or bad, in this life or in the next, on this planet or on the heavenly planets, is temporary and useless, and that an intelligent person should not try to enjoy or even think of such things, is the knower of the self. Such a self-realized person knows quite well that material happiness is the very cause of conditioned material existence and forgetfulness of one's own constitutional position. Oma gyanata madandasya gyananjana salakaya chaksul and militam jena tasmai sri gurave namaha sri chaitanya manobistam stapitam jena bhutale swayarupa kadamayam dadati sva padandikam vanchakopa turubhishcha kripa sindubhye vacha Patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasari Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So it's very nice to be here this morning. I'd like to thank Madan Mohan Prabhu allowing me to speak, and all of the other devotees here for giving me the opportunity to speak this morning. I've been here just for 2 days. I'll be leaving today or tomorrow. I had some things to do here. But it's been just over 2 years. I was last here, I guess, in January of 2009. So this verse here, very wonderful. Prabhupada says in one place, he says, one enjoyment, the understanding of enjoyment, he says, is misconception. Actually, there's no enjoyment, it's just misconception, which I have, that misconception. And I was looking for the opportunity to speak this morning somewhat, although for the last year I've traveled a lot, been many different places, and whenever I come to Alachua, it's always the most difficult place for me to speak. In foreign countries, it's nice. You have to always get translated, so you become very used to that because you speak and then they speak, and while they're speaking, you're thinking of your next thing to say. You know, so when I come back to the West, which hasn't been very often, all of a sudden you just have to continually speak. So it's a different pattern. But is what I wanted to speak about today. As I said, I was here 2 years ago with my wife, Amekala. And it's just in about 1 week, in about 2 weeks is her anniversary of her departure in England back on April 23rd. So this verse actually is very appropriate, understanding this material existence. Amekala and I, we traveled around for some years together, preaching, speaking about Srila Prabhupada. And just before coming here, it was in July of 2008, that we were at a festival, Baltic Sea Festival it was called, part of the Eastern European tours. Every week there's a festival in another town, another city, another village, all throughout the summer. So we were at this festival doing seminar on Srila Prabhupada, and this one devotee lady, Devaki Mataji is her name. She does a lot of service in Bangladesh and up in Norway in different places. She came up to us at breakfast and said, we want to come to Bangladesh Festival this year. So now this year they were having these festivals in Bangladesh for 4 or 5 days. So when she said it, Amekala and I were both there, and Amekala said, oh, she said, I just had a dream last night. She said, and Prabhupada came in the dream. She said, it's only the third dream I've had in over 30 years of Prabhupada. And she said, Prabhupada said to me, you have to accept all invitations to travel and preach because there's not much time left. So we all just looked at each other and thought, what does that mean? And Mekla was saying, well, maybe there'll be a depression soon. We won't be able to afford to fly, or maybe there'll be a war. We won't be able to leave the country. And then she looked at me and she said, "Or maybe we'll be gone." And then the time she was 55, I was 57, and we just looked at each other and laughed and said, nah, won't be that. Anyway, she said, well, Prabhupada said, accept all invitations, so yes, we'll come. And it was always like that. We would get a lot of invitations, go this temple, that temple. And I would always say, you have to accept an invitation to preach. You know, we can't say no. So that was in July of 2008. And we continued through the summer, traveling, preaching. Then we came here in January of 2009. And it was at that time that she felt a pain in her pelvis area, her hip. So it went all the way for the next 12 months. It was never diagnosed that she had cancer, lymphatic cancer, which originated in that area. So when we got back to England in March, after leaving here, basically I had to start taking care of her because of what we thought was a torn ligament. Anyway, somehow or other, we're never able to find out. There were no x-rays. Nothing happened. And my service became taking care of her at the house, and three-story home, running up and down stairs. And she increasingly got worse, but we always justified it with all these different reasons. And this went on for months and months until she was bedridden. And then one day I was in the kitchen, it was about August, and I was preparing a meal. And I had this a little realization, because the whole time I was thinking, my business is preaching, this is my service, travel around and preach. And I was waiting for the day when it would be over that, you know, she would be better and we could continue in our service. But at that day, I realized that this was my service. I was just taking care of her. She was my wife, Prabhupada's disciple, and she needed to be taken care of. So somehow or other, my whole mentality changed at that time. And anyway, it went on. And I had to learn, I didn't know anything about taking care of someone in an illness like this. So things just deteriorated all the way until right after Christmas, when finally we went into the hospital. The pain was so bad, and other symptoms were in there that were so difficult. We went into the hospital and took 10 days to find out what she had, this cancer. And by now it was stage 4, was all over her body. So anyway, we did everything that we always said we wouldn't do. And we found ourselves in the hospital, and they said it was life or death, and this is your only alternative to do chemo. She did one treatment. And of course it was very hellish. And her condition was already very, very weakened. She had, for a year, this had just went throughout her body. So then, 2 weeks after the chemo, you know, the worst thing that they said could happen, it all happened, because when they give you chemotherapy, your whole immune system just disintegrates down to zero. So after about 12 days, she developed this fever. So now she was home, and the fever got worse and worse. We weren't quite aware of what was going on. And again, I was taking care of her, and she was not an easy patient all the time. She wouldn't even let me take her temperature, which that's how you would know what was happening. So somehow her temperature was up to, it was 40 degrees Celsius here. It was about 102 at this time. So they said if it even went over 100, immediately go back into the hospital. So we didn't, and when I told her, she said, I don't want to go to the hospital. Don't want to go to, that's what happened. She said, I don't want to go. So she said, call the devotees. And she was basically ready to leave. This was on January, about January 20th now, last year. And we live near Bhaktivedanta Manor, so within an hour or two, there were like 60, 70 devotees in our townhouse there. And kirtan was going on, and it was the evening, early evening, people were coming. And she was very, very blissful. And she had a smile on her face, her eyes were sparkling, but she had very high fever. And she was kind of going in and out of consciousness. She would go on for 3 more months, but at this time, it appeared like she was going to die. So everyone was coming to see her. She was being very nice. And finally, we had to ask the devotees to leave because she was so weak, and there were just a few of us in the room. So then she was lying in bed, and I was sitting with her, and she just went out. She closed her eyes and she went out of external consciousness. And she started laughing with her eyes closed. So after a minute, she opened up her eyes. And I said, why were you laughing? And she said, I just saw Prabhupada. She said, he just appeared. She said, and it's covered with all these garlands, gardenias and roses, so many garlands. She said, and when I looked at him, he smiled at me. She said, and when he smiled at me, I realized that he loved me. She said, I always thought he was disgusted with me. She said, but Prabhupada loves me. And Sinan, she was lying there, and she closed her eyes again. So after she closes her eyes, she's smiling and she's giggling. And then she opened up her eyes. And I said, what happened? She said, oh, I don't know, she said. She said, I was in a very beautiful place. She said, maybe it was Mayapur. She said, I don't know. She said, and I saw two young boys. She said, very beautiful. She said, and they were playing. She said, oh, maybe it was Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. She said, I don't know. She said, and they were playing and laughing, and they looked at me. And one of them said, it's not time. We'll be back later. And they left. I think, okay. So now I start writing down what she's saying. So then we're sitting there, and she goes back out, closes her eyes, and again she starts laughing. And then she opened her eyes. I said, what happened? She said, I don't know. She said, I was a beautiful place. She said, forest, trees, flowers. She said, and there was a little blue boy. She said, beautiful. And he was, same thing. She said, he was playing and laughing. And then he started to run away. He said, I'll be back later. So two different doctors came to the house in the course of the evening trying to convince her to go to the hospital, saying she had an infection, which it was. She had this, because of her immune system, she got a blood infection which went throughout her body. Septicemia, it's called. So she kept saying, no, no, no. Didn't want to go, and she'd look at me and say, don't bring me to the hospital. Anyway, over the next few hours, different things happened. Family was there, her sons, and everybody they wanted her to go to the hospital. I couldn't make a decision. I had been with her for a year, watching her deteriorate, watching the pain increase. So I couldn't do it. I couldn't say it. But finally, she went into the hospital again. It was about midnight we arrived at the hospital. And by this time, she was very dehydrated. Fever was up to 42 degrees, which is 108. Somehow or other, went up to 108 degrees, which shouldn't even do that. But it did. And they put her on fluids, and they gave her this really heavy antibiotic that they use when you get anthrax and things to try to forget what it was called. It was a very heavy antibiotic. So that was around 1, 2 in the morning. So finally at 10 o'clock in the morning, she opened her eyes. And we're surrounding her, family, a few friends, about 6 or 8 of us. And she saw everyone. This was in the hospital. We're all standing beside her. And she just looked at us, and she looked at me. And she was like a different person. She just wasn't in her body at this time. And she said the most interesting thing. And she just looked, and she said, I'm relevant. She said, I deserve, because Krishna loves me. And she just looked. She said, Krishna loves us. She said, Krishna loves us. And then she kept saying, we're not the controllers. She said, Krishna's in control. She just had this smile, this beautiful look on her face, and she was smiling. And she said, we're not the controllers. She said, Krishna's controlling everything. She said, not us. And she said, but I'm a little stubborn. And then she said, if Krishna didn't love us, why would he go through so much trouble to try to bring us back home, back to Godhead? She said, that shows how much he loves us. And then she looked at all of us, because we're all standing and just looking at her. And she said, I'm nothing. She said, I don't want anyone to think I'm anything. She suddenly felt very humble what she was saying. But over the last 12 hours, what she had been through, it was purely the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Huh? He gave her a lot of strength and a lot of realizations. And after that, to some degree, I guess she became better. She stayed for 3 more months, and they were very horrible, materially speaking. And it was a wonderful lesson for her, for me, taking care of her, for all of us in the family, as she just, her body deteriorated. But as her body deteriorated, her consciousness just kept going higher and higher. And she actually understood. She said she felt it for the first time. Like she said, she felt relevant. For many of us, sometimes especially the ladies, the wives, she struggled a lot in her life, throughout her life, and she never felt worthy of being loved her whole life. And suddenly in this situation, by Prabhupada's mercy, she actually experienced, she felt that Krishna loved her. So, he said for the next 3 months, so many things happened, and her body just kept getting worse and worse. I had to take care of her 24 hours in the hospital, out of the hospital. And it was all she wanted, and I saw how important it was she wanted me to take care of her. She wanted her husband there to do everything. Even in the hospital, we'd be in the hospital, and in the morning at the shift, after the shift break, at the 8 o'clock in the morning, got to learn all the different hospital rituals that went on. They would come in to bathe her, give her a sponge bath or bathe her, change the sheets, and she would just look at them and say, you know, no, it's okay. She said, my husband does it. She said, he does. She said, and he's better than you, she would say. She said, he's so good. She said, he knows where everything is in the hospital, which I did. I learned. I used to, like I was working there, I'd go into the closets and get things for her. I'd never ask anyone anything. And she said, he's better. And of course I was, because I cared and I knew what was wrong with her. I knew what pain. I knew how to touch her, how to clean her, how to do so many things. And then she looked and she said, he's so good. She said, he does everything and he never makes me feel bad. And she would say that so many times to different devotees and things. And it always made me think of Prabhupada. When Prabhupada in his final months, when Abhiram was his nurse and others were taking care, Prabhupada would sometimes say to them, he would say, does this disgust you? Taking care of a person in old age is not an easy thing to do, especially when they're terminally ill. But even Prabhupada said to Abhiram, he would say, do you mind doing this? So that same thing was there, and I saw how important it was just to allow someone to be peaceful, for a devotee as they're going through this transition. This is what happens to all of us. This is what's being described. This process of birth and death is always there. And, I became also, right at this time, in 10 days, April 22nd, it was the first time in 1971 when I met devotees at an Earth Day festival. So it was 40 years ago this month. And, of course, then I was with Srila Prabhupada, who was always, every day, telling us about this material body and about death. And we were so young, Prabhupada would give his class there on the Vyasasan. We'd all be sitting around and he'd say, any moment I could be gone. Then I sat in front of him 1,000 times, you know. And you just sit there and you would shake your head and all these things, they come in, huh? You try to understand. And then 40 years later, I realized I had no idea what I was in store for. And I had no idea what it was all about, this process of birth and death. But it was right there in front of us. And Prabhupada was very kind. And he gave us the facility to manage everything. And Amekkala was very strong. And she had proper mentality as a devotee. There was a period for months. I used to, every day, we'd go into the bathroom, I'd bring her in, and I'd have to sit her down and pick her back up out of the tub, all these things, day after day. And she was so much pain. And she never took painkillers because she couldn't assimilate them very well. And sometimes she'd look and she'd say, I must have done some really horrible things, she'd say. I'd say, no, no, no. She said, I must have done some really bad things, she said, previous. And but she just accepted it. She never complained about it. And she just looked at it that way. She was suffering due to her karma. And we just continued to try to do whatever service we could. And of course, for a devotee, this is our process. This is described in the 10th canto, one who accepts all of their suffering in this material body as just token reaction to sinful activities and goes on performing their devotional service, always praying for the mercy of the Lord. Said that their path back to Godhead is very easy. So we continued to travel right up until September 2009. We practically had to, at that time, weren't using a wheelchair. And then, of course, that was the last trip she took. So then finally things got really bad. We went into the hospice for the last week of her life. And she was going in and out of consciousness. She was in there for 6 days. The last 2 days, over 400 devotees who lived near the manor, they all came to see her in the evening. Radhanath Maharaj, he flew in from India by way of Africa. In a week that all the airports were closed in England because of that big volcanic eruption in Iceland. So there were no flights in England for 5 days. So somehow he managed to get on a flight, one of the first flights that were allowing into England, on a private jet. One devotee in Bombay brought him. So he was there. He got to see Amekla also before she left. So in the hospital, of course, many, many things were happening there in the hospice. And devotees all came. And then we got there on a Saturday. So by Tuesday, she was almost out of external consciousness. Her eyes were closed. And she said very little. And then I went. One of her sons came. He was there for 24 hours a day. He was staying. We were all living at the hospice at that time. So when he arrived, I went home. It was like a 20-minute drive. I thought, go home. I got changed. Tried to lay down for a few minutes just to get some rest. So I thought, let me call up. And as soon as I called up, Madhava, her son, answered. And he said, Mekla, she wouldn't even open her eyes. And now she could hardly speak because it had gone into her throat. And, of course, the only thing she said right after I left was, where's Shruta? Even though she didn't open her eyes, so he said to her, well, he he had to leave the room for a minute. And then a god sister said, oh no, he went home to shower. And I said, oh, I'll be right back. So I drove back as fast as I could, and I went and sat beside her. Again, her eyes were closed, and now she had, his head was shaved because her hair had fallen out from the chemo, so we cut off her hair. So I always rub her head after her head was shaved. So I just rubbed her head and said I was there, and Prabhupada was with her. So then she closed her eyes and didn't hear anything for another 24 hours. And it was in the afternoon. And her pelvis had fractured by now, the bones all disintegrated. So she would keep her one leg up like this because it took the pressure off. And she was lying in bed, so the other leg was out. So somehow that leg, her left leg, had gone down a bit. Well, I was just sitting next to her, and she hadn't spoken for days. And suddenly she opened her eyes, and she just looked right at me. And she said, fix my leg. And she hadn't talked. She couldn't even talk, and it just came out of her mouth. she said, fix my leg. And I got really nervous because I knew the pain that she was in and that her bones were broken. And so I said, I'll go get it. You know, I said, let me call the nurses. I said, I'll get some help and we'll do it. And then she just opened up her eyes again. And she said, you know what to do. And she closed her eyes. And that was the last word she ever said to me. So I fixed her leg. That was on Wednesday in the afternoon. So then that was the last word she said to me. You know what to do. And it just came out. And it was incredible because she could hardly talk because the cancer had gone into her throat and the lymphatic system. So then two more days went by. And finally was on I think it was Saturday morning, the 23rd. It was 5 or 6 in the morning. She just stopped breathing. And there were about half a dozen of us there. Chanting was there. Prabhupada was chanting for weeks and weeks, 24 hours a day on the iPod. And she just stopped. It was so simple. And you would have missed it if you weren't looking at her. There was no big gulps, gasp for air. There was no pushing out. She just took her last breath. Well, Petit, our godbrother Petit de Pavana, he did her chart. So she left, it was 5 or 6 in the morning, which was the juncture of Mangal Artik to sunrise, which was considered auspicious. It was in the month of Purushottama, which is a very auspicious month. And then he analyzed and said that the time that she died, it was the same time that, same day, that Bhishma Dev had picked on the Battle of Kurukshetra. He was able to pick when he was going to die. And, of course, he did that by performing austerities and lying on a bed of arrows. And then when I read it, it was in an email, and I read it and I thought of Amekala. She was lying in this bed for a year in so much pain. And she had never complained. I would even say to her sometimes, you don't complain. She'd say, really? I say, yeah, you don't ever say anything. But she laid on a bed of arrows for about a year. But what was beautiful was to see how Prabhupada took such nice care of her. And when she first became a devotee, it was in 71, was able to go in a temple when they got the manor. She was from England. She was born in Manchester, England. So when the manor was purchased in 73, she went to live in the manor. And of course, Prabhupada was there for 6 weeks. I was Prabhupada's servant then. I was a brahmachari. And she cleaned Prabhupada's rooms every day while he was there. Well, he would be on the morning walk with all the devotees, everyone at the manor. You can see the pictures. There'd be 50 devotees on the morning walk, all just walking through the fields. And she was cleaning his room. So then Prabhupada left. And a month later, she was in her room. And there was all this knocking on the door. And they were yelling, Amekala, Amekala, Amekala. And jumped up, she went to the door, and all her god sisters were standing there, and they're all screaming, you know, Mekala, you have a letter from Prabhupada. And she's like, no, that's not possible. So she had a letter from Prabhupada. She opened it up and read it. And Prabhupada said to her, my dear daughter, this is my daughter, he called her, my dear daughter, he said, thank you very much for cleaning my rooms. He said, while I was at the manor, he said, and if you just go on in this way, he said, doing your devotional service, chant 16 rounds and follow the principles, he said, without a doubt, he said, you'll go back home, back to Godhead, he said, in the end of this lifetime. So, she was delighted. She never wrote Prabhupada a letter, but just because she cleaned his rooms, Prabhupada sent her this wonderful letter. So, she had a nice association. She cooked for Prabhupada at various times. Was able to see him different times. It's late. What time? I guess it's already late, isn't it? 8:45? I think so. Anyway, the point of all this was what I was able to see was how everything Srila Prabhupada has given us It's preparing us, as Prabhupada would say. This whole life is to prepare for this time of death. And what was amazing was, even though 40 years had gone by, in some ways, of course, I was prepared, but I had no idea what it was going to be about, you know. And it was very nice to see, in a very short, we were just together for 7 years, but within that 7 years was packed like a whole lifetime of activities, coming right to the end. And as I said, when I was cooking for every day, what I finally realized, which was also Prabhupada's mercy that one day, was she wasn't my wife anymore. She was, I could see she was going. She was what I thought was mine, you know. I thought this was my wife. We were very close. But then I realized she wasn't my wife. And I started to see, just as Prabhupada had said, my daughter. She was Prabhupada's daughter. And she was Prabhupada's disciple. Very faithful, chaste disciple. Never cared to hear about anyone else or from anyone else. She was Prabhupada's. She belonged to Prabhupada. And our being together was interesting because, of course, I always thought I was a staunch Prabhupada follower. Huh? But then I thought, well, she was more chaste to Prabhupada than I was. She was, you know, she'd be in the temple room. You know, if you didn't give Prabhupada his vision to the deities, she didn't care what the festival was, how many thousands of people were jammed into the temple room. She'd go up and down there, say, make a space for Prabhupada. She saw Prabhupada. So I was very happy to have that opportunity to serve her in that way. Very important service that most of us here, oh my God, brothers and all, we're lining up. We're all next in this procession. And we're very fortunate. Prabhupada's very merciful. And it's the most important thing we can do in Krishna consciousness is just remain loyal to Srila Prabhupada. Imagine Srila Prabhupada. And it was very interesting in this dream, which Prabhupada came to her and told her, there's not much time left. It was literally a year and a half before she died. But his instruction was also very wonderful. Because he didn't say, there's not much time left, go to Vrindavan, chant Hare Krishna, sit down. He told her, accept all invitations to travel and preach. It's what we did. It was our service together. It's what we did all over. And that was his instruction, to do what you're doing. And that's what we accepted and did. It was our service. And so anyway, just about a year now has passed by. It's no easier than it was. But as I said, there's some nice stories she had with Prabhupada, but I think it's just a little late to go on. We can tell. So she had two very wonderful stories. One of them happened in New Mayapur, France. She was also the first lady to go to that temple when they purchased it. It was a chateau. It was beautiful, but it was completely run down, and it was being lived in by vagrants. Anyway, the devotees got it. 10 devotees from England went there to prepare it for Prabhupada coming, and one woman to cook for all of them. It was a Mekala. So finally, when Prabhupada got there, Upendra was his servant, and Kasalya was there. She was cooking for Prabhupada at the time. While he was there, and asked the Mekala to help. So she asked a Mekala to make chapatis, and then she asked a Mekala to go to town, which was just a little village outside of where the chateau was in France, and this is 1975, to get chapati flour. So of course a Mekala walked to town, you know, no one had cars back then. She walked to town, of course couldn't find chapati flour in this French village, but she got some whole wheat flour, went back. And she was young, just 20 years old, 22 years old. She on her own, she kind of hid in the room. She made a chapati dough, checked it, wanted to see that they were going to be all right, that the chapatis would work, and they did. So then Prabhupada gets his massage. Kosaya's cooking, Amekala's helping. Then Upendra comes down to the kitchen, got his gamcha on, you know, and he said, Prabhupada is ready for lunch. So they got the plates ready, and Upendra said to Kasaya, "You bring him his lunch." And Kasaya said, no, she looked at Amekla, said, "You bring it up." So Amekla said, "No," she said, "I'm not bringing Prabhupada his lunch, and I can't go into Prabhupada's room." And Upendra said, "Oh, it's okay." He said, "Prabhupada's taking bath." He said, "You won't even see Prabhupada. He's in the bathroom." He said, "Just go upstairs, put the plate down on his table, and, she said, and you can leave." So he convinced her it was okay. So Mekla got the plates, made her chapati, put it on the plate. She goes upstairs. She opens the door, goes into Prabhupada's room, pushes the door shut. And she's standing there with the plate. And, of course, the door opens from the bathroom. And Prabhupada walks out of the bathroom with his gamcha on. And she's just standing there frozen. And he looked at her, and he's like this far, just like 5 feet away. And he looks right at her, and he said, "You couldn't find chapati flour?" And she's like, and she said, "Prabhupada," he laughed. He said, no, it's okay. He said, "Put the plate down." So Prabhupada immediately knew, and she said, and she would tell this story as she traveled. She said, "I never told anyone." She said, "I was so afraid. No one knew." She said, "And Prabhupada looked at me, and as soon as he, that's the first thing he said was, 'No chapati flour?'" She said, "He read my mind." Prabhupada could read. Prabhupada always read my mind so many times. So that was one of her first experiences. So then that was 75. Then in 76, she had a very wonderful opportunity. Now she's in New York, 55th Street. The skyscraper, 10 years after Prabhupada started this society, right? 10 years later, he was very, very happy there in this big skyscraper building in New York City. So she was there, living there at that time, and they had a Govinda's restaurant on the first floor, I guess, ground floor, first floor, and she was helping cooking there. So there was one devotee would come to take prasadam at the restaurant there. But he was a, we would say he was a bloop devotee. He was a sannyasi, an ex-sannyasi. Prabhupada taught him how to cook. And he had served Prabhupada even for some time. So he would come to the restaurant every day. Not every day, but he would come and he would take prasadam. But none of the devotees would speak to him because he was very offensive to Prabhupada. He wasn't following any regulative principles. He was breaking all four of them. And he was criticizing Prabhupada. He blamed Prabhupada for his not becoming a rock star because he joined the Hare Krishnas when he was 17 years old and played guitar, sang, all these things. He said, "I could have been a big rock star, but I became a Hare Krishna." So in this way, he was kind of critical to Prabhupada. So everyone avoided him. Because, you know, you can't hear blasphemy of a pure devotee, right? You have to kill yourself, you know, or leave the place. So they all left the place. But one person would sit with him and talk to him, Amekala, because she just thought he was a devotee and did so much service. So this went on while they were there. So one day, they're all out in front of the temple chanting, because Prabhupada's coming. So she's standing there by the sidewalk, and everyone's waiting for the car to pull up from the airport. So while she's standing there, here comes this devotee walking up the street. And he's got long hair, beard, you know, Western clothes on. And, of course, he walks right up to her because she was the only person to even talk to her. He said, "What's going on?" She said, "Oh," she said, "Prabhupada's coming." And now she's, her heart's like thinking on. She said, "Prabhupada's coming." He said, "Oh," he said, "I'm just here to eat, you know, to get lunch." And she's thinking, "Oh, Krishna, Krishna," you know, and she's standing there. And so, of course, within a couple of minutes, the car pulls up with Prabhupada sitting in the back seat. So now she's there, he's standing next to her, and the car pulls up with Prabhupada in it. And she's thinking, no, like, you know. So the door opens, all the devotees come, they open the door, and you know, they make an aisle for Prabhupada to go into the temple. So was Prabhupada always, when Prabhupada would arrive, beautiful, his garlands, and his hands would be folded, and he's smiling at everyone. And he starts walking. Of course, he sees his disciple, and he walks right up to him, and he rubs him on the head, you know. And he said, "How are you doing?" He said, "I'm okay, Prabhupada, you know, everything's okay." He said, "Good." He looks, he said, "So," he said, "you'll cook for me while I'm here?" And when he said it, there was all Adi Keshava, Bali Mardan, Tamal Krishna, all these sannyasis are all thinking, "God, he's eating meat, this guy, you know?" And Tamal leans over, says, "Prabhupada, he's eating meat, and he's blasphemous, he's critical of you." And Prabhupada looks, he rubs, he said, "So," he said, "you'll cook for me while I'm here?" And he looks, he said, "Yes, Prabhupada, I'll cook for you." So when he said it, Amekkala, she just like, that was everything she knew about her spiritual master, was how compassionate he was, you know. And she knew she would see this devotee and she would think, he's a devotee. And when she saw Prabhupada, looked at him and saw, he's a devotee, he's my disciple. He didn't care about anything else. The devotees couldn't believe it. This guy's eating meat, Prabhupada's going to let him cook. So of course, Amekkala was his friend. So now Amekkala is cooking for Prabhupada because she's helping him cook for Prabhupada. So, but she understood that part of Prabhupada, his compassion, his mercy for everyone, for all of us here. So that compassion, and that was always what she did. Amekkala was always taking care of the children, and the ladies, and the congregation. It was very important for her, Bhaktivedanta Manor. The whole thing was keep the congregation coming. When we, only one time we talked about her actually dying, a month before she left. We never discussed it. And somehow we just talked about it very objectively. And she was saying, so she said, you know, if I don't pull through, she said, of course we'll have cremation. She said two songs. She wanted two songs at her cremation ceremony, which we played at the end. She said, and on a big feast at the manor. She said, and everyone, all my God brothers, God sisters, she said, I want everyone invited. For her, it was just another excuse to have a festival at the manor, because that's what she did. She would organize festivals to bring in the rank and file, Prabhupada's devotees, his disciples, to bring them back in. That was always her thing. So now, this was another good reason to have a festival at the manor. She said, have a nice festival. She said, and get Bala Gopal, Dhananjaya's wife, God's sister, she said to be in charge of the feast. She said, I want a really nice ISKCON feast. She said, everything, you know, and she said, and fried in ghee. And then she looked at me and she said, and don't be cheap. I said, I promise, I won't be cheap. The temple paid for it, so I was very happy about that. That was very nice. She was a very important person in the community there. So that's what she said. She said, make a nice feast, have a nice festival. She said, and then the ceremony, cremation, she said. And then she said, after that, she said, you can have a private party at the house for all my close friends. She said, and then she said, play the song, Time to Say Goodbye. It was an Andrea Bocelli song, a song she liked very much. And she said, play that. She said, then everybody can cry. She said, and then you have to move on. And I said, yes. So that was a month before she left. And there was another time we were all sitting in front of her because she was disintegrating. You know, her body was just disappearing. And we would all just look at her with this sadness, you know. And the one time she looked at us, there were like 10 of us there, she said, don't feel sorry for me. She said, I feel sorry for you. She said, I'm finished suffering, she said, but you're all going to have to go through this. She said, I feel sorry for you. So everything she said was very sweet, and very profound, and very simple. But that's how she saw it, and she did everything as she needed to do. She left in her home the Bhaktivedanta Manor there, so it was very nice. So anyway, very happy to be here today. Thank you for listening. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Are there any questions? Okay, Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.